Everyone has their own unique views and needs when it comes to financial success. If you'd like to leave your financial woes behind and live a life of financial freedom, you've come to the right place. Welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, hosted by Steve Sexton. The show will help you with the ins and outs of money. We talk about financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars and keeping you up at night. We talk about money, tax reduction, saving more, spending less, 401ks, risk management, retirement, and everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. Now, here is your host of Saving with Steve, Steve Sexton.
Oh, welcome to the Saving with Steve Show, where we talk about the ins and outs of money. Pretty much everything under the sun that relates to you having a happier, healthier relationship with money. My name is Steve Sexton. I want to welcome you to the show. Again, I appreciate you sharing this with your friends, your family, your associates. Pretty much everybody has been starting to watch the program. So we're well over 500,000 listeners. We're very excited about that, and we want to thank you for that. Now, today, we have an outstanding show. We have Ruth King. She's the Profitability Master, here to share why every business needs to grow wealth in a pandemic. And you know what? Yeah, it's possible. Ruth is going to share some great words of wisdom on how your business, your life, and be more profitable this year in the midst of the pandemic. Now, she's got a new book out. It's called Profit or Wealth: Simple Rules for Sustaining Business Growth. You know what? She has four decades of growing and advising businesses. So you know what? She's already had the failures to build, use as building blocks to grow. Wonderful thing. I'm going to be talking about the 401k mishaps and how to avoid them. And then we have our first guest. And here's really interesting. We have COVID-19. We have the vaccine. It's starting to get out there. It's widely spread for most people. You know, the question is whether you work for somebody, whether it's your own business, whether it's, you know what, you've got the whole organization, is your organization ready to help your team vaccinate and get back to work? So what's your company's vaccination strategy? We have author and employment lawyer, Rick Grimaldi, who's been at the forefront of the COVID-19 issue since the beginning. He's going to share some insight. So I want to, you know what, hold on to you for a few seconds. We're going to have Rick come in here. Okay. Hey, Rick, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here today.
Steve, thank you. Really happy to be here with you.
I'm glad you're here. But you know what, one of the things that it's really interesting to me, because I listen to podcasts and TV shows, and you go, you know what, that's a wonderful guest, but why should I listen to him? So let me tell you why you should listen to Rick. Well, first of all, he's a partner with Fisher Phillips, which is one of the preeminent management side labor and employment firms. Rick is a workplace trend expert and the author of the book, the newly released book, 5 out of 5 on Amazon, Flex, A Leader's Guide to Staying Nimble and Mastering Transformative Change in the American Workplace. That's super timely. But here's the reason why. Rick has a unique perspective because he spends all day working with companies, helping them to adapt to the ever-changing business environment, helping them achieve their goals and ultimately help them become a better employer. Now, on top of that, Rick's had his peers select him as the best lawyer in America for the last 3 out of 4 years. So Rick, quite frankly, I'm really grateful you're here because the insights that you have, you know what, you've seen the failures, you've seen the successes, you know what works, you know what doesn't work. And whether somebody's a manager at their business, an executive at their business, or just an employee at their business, they need to know this information. So I'm really happy you're here.
Well, thank you. And I'm really happy to be here as well and be able to share some insight.
So before I get into this, I got to know, why did you get into employment law?
Do you have about 30 years? It evolved for me over a period of time when I got out of law school. But I had an experience actually before law school when I was quite young involving labor unions. And at the time, I was actually in a labor union. Oddly enough, I was a lifeguard on the beach in New Jersey. And we were represented by a labor union that really had nothing to do with lifeguarding or public safety or anything like that. Long story short, they took us out on strike and it did not end well for us. So that was sort of my first foray into the world of labor and trying to understand that how every little issue can impact you so significantly. And from there, I think I started to develop a connection with it and then got very fortunate after law school. I had the opportunity to go work for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I was Deputy General Counsel to Governor Tom Ridge. And at that time, I was also the Chief Counsel at the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry. That really solidified for me this particular area of the law. And frankly, what really has attracted me to it is it matters to people. If you really think about it, when we think about work, it is so much of our essence, and it is so much of what we do all the time. We live it. That to me, these are real issues that involve real people. And that's what I love about it.
You know what? That's great. I always find there's something that happened in the past that just sends somebody in the direction that negative that turns into such a positive for how you're helping everybody else. So I think that's wonderful. But we need to get to COVID.
Yeah, well, or past COVID, I guess, is what we really want. But yeah, we sure do.
Well, you know what? Now we've got the vaccine coming out. Right. You know what? I'm in my late 50s, so I've got my second vaccination. You know what? There's some companies that I've talked to that haven't brought people back. Some people are doing it. What should companies be doing right now, setting policy? What should they be doing right now to make sure that they're doing the right things for their employees?
Well, one is they should have a plan. And by now we would hope that, you know, we're a little over a year into this and working with, you know, appropriate counsel. We do a lot of work in that area. They should have a plan, and the plan really should focus on safety. One of the primary obligations of an employer is to provide a safe workplace for its employees, for their employees. And that's really critical now for a variety of reasons. One, it's the right thing to do, but it also reduces your legal liability and your exposure. And you want people to feel good about their work environment. And so in this particular situation that we've all found ourselves in, it's even more critical. And so continuing with things like masking and social distancing and proper sanitizing and all of those sorts of things should be continued. To the extent that your employees can work at home and they've been successful doing so, and that's probably a kind of a loaded word in this environment, because successful and productive during all of this is probably a little bit different than maybe what our usual expectations would be. Mm-hmm. But if you can continue to have them work remotely for the time being, you're probably encouraged to do that. You should be educating them also. And I mean educating them on a regular basis in terms of keeping them informed about return to work, where things stand. The vaccine, educating them in terms of where it's available, how they can do it, what they should consider, what they should be doing. All of those things are incredibly important in terms of getting your workforce motivated, making them feel good, getting them back, keeping them productive. And of course, and I have to say it, is of course reducing your own liability as an employer. Very, very important stuff.
So let's take that a little bit further.
Sure.
When we talk about education, there mm-hmm. are some people who feel that, hey, is it a real vaccine? You know what? How do you, you know what? You talk to friends, you've talked to other people, you know, sure. You hear this on the news here and there. I think is it important that people, that companies educate about the vaccine so people can become comfortable if they're trying to vacillate on whether or not they're going to get it or not?
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, you can only do so much. Obviously, you don't want to get into a situation where you're dispensing medical advice, unless, of course, you're a healthcare provider. But you know, you can educate them in terms of the available information. You can provide them with the CDC information. You can provide them with all the things that have been out there that we see almost on a daily basis, and show them, you know, statistics and really can. That's about all you can do, right? Just present them with the information and hope they make the right decision. It gets a little bit dicey as an employer when you start to go beyond that, even though the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, the EEOC, has said that, you know, an employer can mandate a vaccination of its employees before they return to work or as a condition of continued employment, with certain exceptions, which we can talk about. But is that really the right approach? We did a flash survey actually at our firm nationally, and the vast majority of employers would prefer to motivate their employees to get vaccinated. rather than mandate it. It begins to then create a number of issues if you start to mandate it.
Okay, so what if you know what your book's all about dealing with change and transforming.
Sure.
So how would employers go about motivating employees to get vaccinated? What would be good strategies for that?
Sure. Well, we started with education. Obviously, the more you can inform and educate and be transparent, trust matters, right? If there's a good working and trust relationship between management and workers, that's very helpful. The other thing you can do is incentivize them. Now, I say that, and there are some caveats around it, because if your incentives, depending on what those incentives are, you could sort of fall into the trap of the, which a lot of wellness programs have, where you can run afoul of certain rules and so forth relative to offering incentives around health. And of course, there are the privacy issues and all that that are attendant to that. But you can, you know, there are numbers of incentives that employers can look at in terms of getting their employees motivated, whether that be time off down the road. Again, you have to pay attention to the labor laws as they apply, but, you know, gift cards, those sorts of things. It's been done for a number of years with the flu shot, for example, and quite successfully. And it tends to, you know, the carrot tends to drive better behavior than the stick.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back with more of Rick Amaldi. We're going to be talking about his book, Flex. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to the show. We have Rick Grimaldi. We're going to be talking about his book, more about COVID. Before we do that, I just want to thank you all for listening, and I appreciate you letting your friends, family, and associates know about the show. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information and insight on Saving with Steve, I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Oh, by the way, check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and have you live a life of financial and personal freedom. Also, if you'd like to join us at on our Facebook at Saving with Steve Sexton, feel free, or Saving with Steve at savingwithsteve.us. You can get all the replays, exclusive access to the after show videos, guest gifts, and more. Now, I want to bring back Rick. We're going to be talking a little about your book in a minute. But
sure.
One of the biggest questions that our viewers blog when we set you up as a guest was asking, hey, look, we get back to work and then we have one of these strains, the Brazilian strain or whatever strain it is, comes right back and starts affecting us. What should be employers doing? How do they transition to work with that?
Well, and this does go to the book, you know, stay nimble, remain flexible. The good news, Steve, is that we kind of have a roadmap now because we just went through this drill a year ago. So now we, you know, if you think back, the scramble and the chaos that surrounded responding to the then beginning of the pandemic and what to do and people not being able to work and being very scared and rightly so. And that's always the potential with these variants. The good news is the vaccinations seem so far to be working. All indications are on any variant that we know of, but to your point, we could find one that maybe we don't. You have to be ready to move back into that mode, to be nimble and to flex to get, you know, maybe you have to go back to remote work where you can. Many people, even during this the course of this pandemic, have been unable to do that, right? Essential workers had to be at work. So you have to make sure that you're ready to go, that you're willing to work with people that may be fearful, give people appropriate time if they need it. If someone does get sick in their family, if they get sick, make sure you continue, you know, and have those masks ready. You may have to sanitize your facility. So, I mean, all the things that we've been doing, I think there really is a playbook, and mm-hmm. employers need to maintain that playbook. And let's hope it doesn't happen. But with the off chance that it does, we're ready to go. And that's really what this, you know, being flexible is about, is being able to adapt quickly to what is really very rapidly changing circumstances in our environment.
You know what? I was going to say, it's almost like you have to now have a pandemic program as part of your human resource manual, so everybody knows.
Yeah, I will tell you, it's funny, and I also speak of our firm and our firm chair, who was incredible in terms of us being a nimble through all of this. And we would joke that he's always so prepared that he probably, you know, reached back, pulled out his binder, and said pandemic playbook on it. So there's nothing wrong with that. That's absolutely appropriate. That's good planning, right? You know that you can be flexible, because I always use this quote, right? You know, Mike Tyson always said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And the key is to react once you get punched. And boy, did we all get punched last March, right?
Oh, yeah, we did. Well, you got to pivot. Now, let's talk about your book. You know what? It's only been out since February. It's got 5 out of 5 stars on Amazon. So it's a great book. So why did you decide to write the book?
Well, I mentioned to you earlier about if you had 30 years, this is really a 30-year okay. labor of love for me. You know, I have been in and around the workplace as an employee, as a manager, as a counsel, as a consultant for 30 years, and in one way, you know, shape, form, or another. And I had a lot of information, a lot of ideas, and the best employers that I've seen have been those employers that are able to stay nimble, to be flexible, and to recognize trends as they come down the pike. And that's not always easy to do because you're in the moment. And, you know, we've always had change, both in our society and in the workplace. And so what's different, though, and what really prompted me to write the book, Steve, was how rapidly things have changed. And you think about it just technologically, you know, it was what, 30 years from the time we went from, you know, I don't know, the television to, you know, to color TV or some, you know, mm-hmm. those sorts of things. But think about just how rapidly things changed in the technological era. And it really all changed significantly the day Steve Jobs stood up on stage and held up an iPhone. And things have changed so rapidly that we've almost hit this sort of odd cognitive dissonance where it's hard to keep up. And employers, that has been a struggle. And I've noticed that in my practice as I see them, you know, day to day. I thought, you know, we need to get our arms around this. I wanted to make sure that I could write something that was easy to understand, that would give people some idea of what the expectations are around change and help them, frankly, employers and leaders master that change, because that's how you're going to win the war for talent as we go forward and be profitable and remain productive. And it's really a lot of market-based data and stories around that.
Now, do you, like, we have obviously a new president. We heard, we've got his, you know, first 100 days in. He's got mm-hmm. an idea for the future. I mean, you know what, with employers, they're going to get affected by that.
Oh, boy, yeah.
And you know what? What would be your recommendation for employers, for managers right now, especially with that change coming?
read the book. And I will tell you, and in an example, again, of our firm, Fisher Phillips' ability to flex, take a look at our website. We really converted ourselves into a resource during the pandemic for the public, really. Mm-hmm. And you know, obviously, we represent employers. So for employers to take a really good look at the information and what we can provide. And we do that on a regular basis. And we're doing that going forward with regard to the future of work, and specifically as it relates to the administration, because what we're seeing already are tremendous changes. If you know, the president's announced, you know, the move, the infrastructure legislation, which is going to have you know, family, a paid family leave component to it, which is pretty significant for employers. The push toward a more labor friendly environment, which is going to be a significant change, and employers have to pay attention. And so these things are going to come pretty rapidly right now. And you hit on it, Steve. I mean, new administration, very pro labor administration. Businesses are going to have to adapt to that because there are going to be some challenges ahead.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to the book, and it means stay nimble, is there a step-by-step when something like this hits? What's the step-by-step besides, you know, obviously you got to educate, set a policy. Sure. What are the things that employers need to do, have in place? On top of that, if you're a small business employer, it would make sense to have some sort of counsel to help get you through that, because the last thing you want to do is think you're doing it right and then find out you're getting sued.
Well, that's exactly right. I'm a huge fan of being preventive. And a lot of what is in the book, as I identify the changes that we're seeing, whether they be demographic changes, you know, the changes inside the workplace, demographics, AI, technology, all of those things are changing. But there are also things that are external, as we just witnessed with the pandemic, even issues like climate change, which are going to have a business impact, an impact on the bottom line for many businesses. And small and mid-sized businesses may not have the resources, for example, that a large corporation has to address some of those. So I would say absolutely have a plan, have a consultant, whether it be an investment consultant, people that you trust, a group of consultants, you know, legal consultants, a good HR consultants, whether they be external or internal to your organization. Good HR professionals are, whether they're worth their weight in gold, in the sense that they are able to also sort of pick up on what's coming down the road and work to stay preventive. And I think that's really critical, is to keep your eyes looking forward and recognize that we can still use some of what we have in place. Look, management by walking around is never going to change, I think, even in an era where we may be working at home more, which is something, you know, I think every employer now has to address. So the key to that is to make sure that I believe this very strongly, transparent with your employees, continue to work with them, let them know you care, have good employee relations policies and practices in place. You're going to avoid a lot of problems, and it's going to allow you to attract the best talent. The talent pool is changing considerably. And in order to be successful going forward, employees, maybe a candidate that is coming to your workplace to look for a job, to they're going to assess you as well. And they want to go to a work site and look around and feel like they're comfortable, that they see people that are like them. The generation, the millennials and Gen Z employees that are really coming into the workplace rapidly, they want to feel and see diversity. They want to know that it's not just lip service, that there's real inclusion going on in the workplace, that the workplace looks like their school looked, or their social circles look, which are very different maybe than yours and mine. And I can say that about you because you did give away your age at the beginning.
No, I was just thinking about that. You want to really see a melting pot in an office. And I also think if you're managing, you want that multiple perspective approach. It's no longer that, hey, I've got my entourage of managers that are saying yes to me. It doesn't work like that anymore. It's vastly changed if you want to succeed in this environment or succeed big.
Well, that's a great point. And it goes to listening. Good communication is incredibly important, and I talk about that in the book. And communication has changed, and so yeah, you do absolutely want those fresh ideas. Having said that, however, part of inclusion and part of adding value, and candidly, I think being a really solid employer of choice that can win the war for talent and be successful, is to recognize that there is a place in your workforce for the more seasoned, we'll say, employee. And why do I say that? Well, because there are opportunities for mentoring. You know, that Gen Y millennial or Gen Z employee can learn a ton from the more seasoned employee that's been there for a while. And that more seasoned employee can learn from some of those ideas that the Gen Y, Gen Zs bring to the workplace. And so there's really value in that. And I think we're seeing more and more of that now. But the companies that utilize that really well, and that's, I think, if anybody remembers anything, that they should be thinking in those terms, that the more you can have different ideas generationally and culturally, the more successful you're going to be, because frankly, that's going to be your customer base.
Yep, that's right. So, hey, Rick, I want to thank you for being on the show. This is Rick Grimaldi with Fisher & Phillips. He's the author of A Leader's Guide to Staying Nimble and Mastering Transformative Change in the Workplace. Hey, how can people get a hold of you and they need your help?
If they're interested in talking to me, they can get me at my website, which is rickgrimaldi.com. And that'll also link you to the Fisher Phillips website, where, again, it's a tremendous resource for these sorts of issues, frankly, that we're dealing with, not just in the future, Steve, but right now.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Rick, again, I want to thank you for being with us today. The insights that you share, I'm just grateful that you did, because there's so many people that, even though we've got the vaccine coming out, they're in still need of great information. So thank you. I wish you well. Stay happy, stay healthy, and hopefully we'll have you on in the future.
Well, Steve, thank you. And I wish the same to you and yours.
Thanks. We'll see you.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Don't let your financial woes keep you up at night and prevent you from living a life of financial and personal freedom. Hi, I'm Steve Sexton, host of the Saving with Steve Show. We're going to be talking about the ins and outs of money, those financial issues that could be costing you thousands of dollars, causing stress, keeping you up at night. We're going to talk about money, tax reductions, saving more, spending less, your investments, risk management, retirement, and everything associated with you having a healthier, happy relationship with money. So if you've ever dreamed of living a life of financial and personal freedom, you owe it to yourself and your family to tune into the Saving with Steve Show. Join me, Steve Sexton, on the Saving with Steve Show as we talk about everything under the sun when it comes to money. To learn more about the show, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us, savingwithsteve.us. We'll see you soon.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back. We had Rick Grimaldi with Fisher Phillips. Wonderful guy. You know what? Very accomplished. He's been at the forefront of giving insight on COVID-19 with companies, how to implement things, how to make sure your companies get your employees get educated, getting them back to work quickly. And he gave some wonderful guidance. So whether you're a senior manager, a manager, or just an employee, great to know. You know what? We had Ruth King. We've got Ruth King coming up. She's been wonderful. But right now we're going to talk about 401k mishaps to avoid. First of all, these happen all the time. People get started, they don't know how to invest, they know they need a 401k, don't know why, so they just get started. But there's a lot of things people do and they do them wrong, and there's little mishaps that can cost you big down the road. So let's talk about a few. First of all, this one's first called a low default savings. Typically, when you go into a 401k program, the minimum you can contribute is probably 3%, okay? Now, this is great for a start, okay? Because only contributing 3%, yes, 30 years of 3% could be significant, but nowhere near as significant as more. Now, I want to put this out there. One of my nephews, he and his wife talked to me about 5 years ago about the 401k, how to contribute with their new companies and all that stuff. The first question I asked him is this: hey, how much can you contribute on a monthly basis, still pay your bills, still travel, and do all those wonderful things you want, like save for a house and so on? And I said, would you be able to save the maximum, which was $17,000 at the time? And they said, yeah, we could do that easily. Great, perfect. I said, you know what? If you contribute $17,000, what will your companies match? Calculated that, it turned out to be about $43,000 a year if they both did that. I said, if you did that every single year and it just averaged 7%, you would have over $5 million when you guys are 56 years old. Do you think you can retire on $5 million? And I said, yeah, we could do that. We can have a great life on that. I said, great. So now you learn that Retiring is a long-term accumulation event. Therefore, what you want to do, if you're just getting started, you're not my relatives, you want to make sure you can contribute as much as you possibly can to that 401k and still pay your bills, go travel, save for the house and all those kind of things, pay for kids' college. And each year when you get a raise or a cost of living increase, increase your contribution until you hit the maximum every year, okay? Now, one of the things, if you don't contribute too much, you might not be eligible for the match that your company has. So for example, you might have to contribute at least 8% in order to get the 4% match or the 6% match the company has. So you could be missing out on money there. Next thing, tax breaks. Think of this. If you have $100,000 income each year, you're going to pay on average tax bracket of 30%, $20,300. If you contribute the maximum, which is $19,500, you're going to save $6,000 in taxes. More importantly, you'll be in a position where your assets that you contribute to your 401k, they're going to grow. They're going to make money off the money you should have paid taxes, off the interest you earn, on the top of that. So it's going to triple compound for you. That's what you're getting when you're contributing each year to a 401k. Next thing, automatically accepting the default investment. Most people don't know what to put it in, so they go into one of those target date funds. The target date fund says, hey, I'm going to retire in 2055. And guess what? Hey, you just put it in there. And you know what? It's set up as a bunch of stocks, bonds, and cash. And as you get older or closer to retirement, it gets more and more conservative. Now, however, the feel, the fees, the underlying investments, and at a rate in which the fund grows might not be an ideal fit for you. Take a look at the other investment options, especially in your 401k, before sticking it with the target date fund. You might find something that's better. Next, what about these excessive fees in 401ks? Well, some 401k plans, the employer, they negotiate low cost to make sure everything's going well for the employees. Others are riddled with expensive funds, excessive fees. You know what? However, your money could be in a lower cost fund with your 401k plan. All you need to do is take a look at the information that's sent to you, each participant every year, of the annual 401k fees. It's a disclosure statement that lists how much each fund of the 401 plan costs on one single chart. You know what? Those disclosures actually come from your human resources. They'll come from your plan provider. And you can also get them from the mutual fund provider. Check this document each year. See if there's a lower cost fund that fits your investment needs. Why lower cost? Because if you can get an extra 1%, that's an extra $147,000 in your pocketbook in 30 years. Is it worth it? Yeah, it is if it's $147,000. Hey, next one. People leave before they're fully vested. You know, you don't get to keep employees. Your contributions to your 401k until they're fully vested. Some 401k plans, you know what? They have immediate investment in the company. Others, they have a time period. It could be 4, 5, 6 years. Now, if you've been with the company for 5 years and your 401k vests at 6, you might have $30,000, $40,000 in that vesting that won't go into your account until you're there for the 6th year. So if you decide to leave, don't leave the money on the table. You should be negotiating with the company you're leaving, your company you're going to see if they'll backfill that for you. Others, triggering early withdrawal penalties. You know what? Cashing out a 401k before age 59 and a half is not ideal. Why? Because if you take out a withdrawal, you're going to have a 10% penalty. On top of that, if you're in a 24% tax bracket, hey, that's significant because you're doing a $5,000 withdrawal. You got $500 on the penalty, $1,200 on the taxes for the withdrawal. You're going to end up with $3,300. That's a minuscule amount. Okay. You want to avoid this as much as possible. Now, also initiating a 401k loan. Traditionally, you have the ability to borrow 50% of what's vested up to $50,000. With the CARES Act, it goes up to 100% and $100,000. But you know what? You've got to pay these loans back in 5 years. The loans have a variety of fees. You got to pay the interest. You miss out on the gains. You know what? It should be a last resort before you do this because the interest isn't deductible and you're tapping into your retirement asset. If you leave your job, the loan balance must be paid back and due by the next tax time you file your taxes. Loans aren't, if they're not repaid, they're considered a distribution, which means you're going to take taxes and penalties. Okay. Also, we see this happening with people over the age of 72. You know what? Everybody starts, you know, losing faculties. They get a little slower. They might be forgetting. You know what? Just going to say this up front. Client a few years back, kids came in with mom. Mom was 84. She wasn't really a client, but they came to me wanting to be a client. And what happened was she forgot to take her required minimum distribution for 3 years, total of $102,000. Her penalty was $51,000. Plus, she had to take taxes on the excess $51,000, which made her actually out of $100,000, she netted $30,000. Okay. That is just brutal. So, folks, you don't want to forget taking those distributions. It's very, 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 very important that you do. So last but not least, it's key that you pull out your human resource manual as opposed with your 401k. I would recommend you talk to an advisor when you get a 401k so you can get some guidance on the best funds. If you leave your company, which is happening more and more these days, where you go from one company to the next, you have an old 401k at an old company. Okay. But the thing here is this, if you're not at that company, neither should your 401k be. You have two options. The first option is to take all that money and move it into your current 401k if it's a good 401k. Second option is to have it rolled over into a traditional IRA and go to an investment advisor who can manage those funds for you. And they can have, you know what, you might have 30 or 40 different options in your 401k, but if you go to an investment advisor, they can have 1,000 different options. You can get better rates of return, maybe even better fees. So you might want to consider that. Now, hey, look, that's just advice for avoiding 401k mishaps. Stick with us. We're going to be right back. We're going to have Ruth King with us. All righty. See you soon.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hello, welcome back to Saving with Steve. We just had Rick Amaldi from Fisher Phillips, the labor law, talking about all the wonderful things companies should be doing with COVID. Now, the second half of our show, we've got a treat for you. We have Ruth King. Ruth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Steve. I'm glad to be here. I'm thrilled, in fact. Thank you for having me.
I'm glad you're here as well. And I get a kick out of this because, you know, I know you watch podcasts because we talked about that. I watch them. I watch shows. And when you see a subject matter expert, I go, okay, so why should I listen? So let me tell you why you should listen to Ruth. See, Ruth is known as the profitability master. Yes, she's accomplished, has multiple advanced degrees, started a small business center in Georgia, taught women how to start their own business, launched her own TV channel. Boy, she's done a lot. Now she's also been a contributor to the Wall Street Journal, Fox, MSNBC, as well as others. Most important, she learned from business failures. She learned from business successes. Ruth is unbelievably passionate and successful in helping small businesses, small business owners get profitable and stay profitable. Ruth has this new book called Profit and Wealth, Simple Rules for Sustaining Your Business Growth. Now, the reason why I think we're real lucky to have Ruth is because, you know what, she's been doing this for 4 decades, but with 4 decades, you have failures and you learn from those. And she's been able to help other people learn from her failures so they can be successful and be successful faster. So for that, I'm grateful for that you're here, Ruth.
My pleasure. You know, my dad always said it was better to learn from the mistakes of others so that you didn't make them. And, you know, I've had them, my clients have had them, and I teach, okay, don't do this. This is what happens when this happened. And so you're right. I've got four decades of talking about that with small business clients. And if they pay attention, they can avoid a lot of heartbreak and a lot of cash flow issues.
I like to say the way you said, don't do this. It's like a little kid sticking the pin into the socket. So here's the question. What inspired you to write Profit and Wealth?
Profit and Wealth is actually the sequel to The Courage to Be Profitable. And when I wrote that book, I thought, okay, everybody's going to get profitable. And they intuitively will know to build wealth. Well, guess what? I was totally wrong, because there are so many people out there who get profitable and think, okay, that's all I have to do. And the pandemic was a perfect example of that. A lot of people lost their businesses because they were profitable, but they didn't build the savings. They didn't build the cash. They didn't build the wealth along with it. And if you didn't do that, you know, PPP loans came in 30 days later, but if you couldn't survive for at least those 30 days, bye-bye. So it's not only building the profit, it's got to be building the wealth. And so I wrote the sequel to it, go, hey guys, it's not only profit, you got to build the wealth at the same time.
You know, that's so true, because I have seen and I've had work with people as a financial consultant that they thought they had a very successful business, but it only really provided for them and their family, and they didn't save all that much. And I understand, you know what, let's just start with this question up front. Why is cash so important?
Because without cash, you can't pay your bills. You can't keep a roof over your head. Your employees can't have their payroll. And without cash, you can't survive. It's just done. You don't have it. And the interesting thing about cash is people think, okay, they go by their checking account and they say, okay, I've got cash in my checking account. They forget about all the bills that have to come out of that so that cash has to cover all of that stuff. So it's not only having the cash, it's making sure that you have the cash to be able to pay your bills and have some luck over. And that's the real key with cash flow. I mean, I had one client who we started a business and grew it to $2 million in 12 years, only on cash by looking at their bank account every day. And as long as they could pay their payroll and pay their bills and take their discounts, they were fine. They hit $2 million and stopped growing. And then they started having problems. Long story short, they were losing a nickel for every dollar that came in the door for 12 years.
Oh my gosh.
Growth masked that whole problem. Because cash flow was always increasing while their growth was increasing. As soon as growth stopped, cash started going away.
Ooh. Okay. So now this is going to lead to the next question. You know what? You've been helping businesses not only survive, but thrive for four decades. What's the key to your success?
The key to success is actually implementation. It's not enough to set the goal. It's not enough to say, I want to do this. It is, all right, I want to do this, and I'm going to do this today, this tomorrow, this next week, and making sure that you do some follow-up to make sure that it all happens. You know, we all have lovely goals, things that we want to do and everything along those lines. But if we don't implement it, you know, that's basically a wish or a dream. Implementation is hard, because we get person over here comes over here and says, I want you to do this. And person over here comes over here and says, I want you to do this. Or an employee comes in, or a customer calls, or whatever else it is, you've got to stay with implementation. And you also have to budget. Most people don't live by a budget. You've got to have a business budget. Revenues, direct expenses, overhead expenses. Where do you expect your bottom line to be? So those two things are the key to success.
You mean to tell me that people run their business like they do their checking account?
Yeah, nah, not really.
Oh, actually, I've run across people who do.
Yes, that one.
Like the one that they have no clue that they're losing money, except for when things slow down or they stop growing. So, yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
You have 10 rules for growth, 10 rules for profit. How did you discover those rules?
Through 40 years of working with my clients, that's where they all got distilled, to be perfectly frank. And we've implemented all 20 rules with my client base, and they are growing profitably. They have the tools, the processes to do what they need to do. And they are building recurring revenue. They know the difference between a P&L and a balance sheet. Maybe not in the beginning, but by the time we finish, they know it. Mm-hmm. And they know that balance sheets are more important for profitability than P&Ls and why. So that's where they all came from. It's like, okay, this is rule one, this is rule two. And it's taking a client who raises their hand and says, I need some help, but they're willing to do the work. There's a lot of people say, I need the help. And you know that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure you've had clients like that too. And they just don't want to do the work. And it's like, okay, bye.
Yeah. No, everybody's had a client like that. They're just, oh, okay, could you do that for me?
No.
Does it work that way? So what are some of those rules?
Right. One, there's a lot of cash rules. And my favorite cash rule is to save 2% of every dollar that comes in the door. And it's really easy to do that. And it's really easy not to do that. So let's assume you got $10,000 in the door this week, because I can do that number in my head. 2% of $10,000 is only $200. So at the end of the week, you transfer that $200 into a savings account. And believe me, it adds up. And the key is not to take it when it does add up and go, oh, I can go do this. Going to the big boys toy store, the big girls toy store is not a good idea. It's meant to be there in case we get another pandemic or whatever else it is.
They can't use it for shopping therapy, huh?
Yeah. another rule that's really profit and wealth is to make sure that you always have recurring revenue, recurring income, customers who buy from you on a loyal basis. And the profit part of that is making sure that you price it properly. And the wealth part of it is building that customer base and that loyal customer base who is buying from you in good times and bad. And they're really loyal to you and you're loyal to them. So that's a rule that's in both. Another rule that's in wealth is to make sure that you have a business that is not dependent upon you and a business where you totally separate business expenses from personal expenses. I know too many business owners who, I'll just put this on my business credit card. Nobody will find it. Well, guess what? Your budget gets blown, mm-hmm. You know, and that type of thing. So, and the profit side, we do something, I do something called net profit per hour, which is for every billable or revenue producing hour, how much actually drops to the bottom line. Percentages don't matter because you can't take a percentage to the bank. I made 10% last year. Here's my 10%. Can you deposit this? The teller would look at you like, are you nuts? But what you can deposit is dollars. So, you know, two companies can have a 10% net. One could be earning $10 net profit per hour and another can be earning 50. Which would you rather be? I'd rather be the 50. I don't know about you.
Oh, yeah. I want more. Oh, yeah. If I'm running a business, I want more. Hey, Ruth, stay right there. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back with more insights from Ruth King.
More expert advice for having a happier relationship with money still to come on the Saving with Steve Show.
Did you know the average American has 97 points they could add to their credit score, but no idea how to get them? The data scientists at Scoremaster cracked the code on how. Adding 97 points to your credit score is like found money. It means fast loan approvals, huge discounts, and low interest rates on everything from buying or refinancing a home to leasing a new car to applying for a credit card. How fast is Scoremaster? One member raised his credit score 33 points in just 5 days, another 43 points in a couple of weeks. Scoremaster is so easy, it takes about a minute to get started. If you hurry, you can get to try Scoremaster for free. That's right, Scoremaster for free, and see how many plus points you can add to your credit score. Go to scoremaster.com/savings. That's scoremaster.com/savings. Again, that's scoremaster.com/savings.
Welcome back to the show that is here to help you achieve your financial goals. It's the Saving with Steve Show. Now here's your host, Steve Sexton.
Hey, welcome back to Saving with Steve. We have Ruth King with us. Profit or wealth, that's what we're talking about. But before we do, I just want to truly thank you for tuning in. I appreciate you letting your friends and family and associates know about our show. We hit the 500,000 listener mark. All the replays are available at savingwithsteve.us. If you're enjoying the stories of helpful information insight on Saving with Steve, then I encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel so you never miss a show. Check out a few of our affiliates at UK Health Radio, BBS Radio, Talk Radio New York City, E360 TV, Las Vegas TV Network. All these networks are dedicated to empowering you to solve problems, uplift your spirit, and live a life of personal and financial freedom. Now, we're back with Ruth King. Ruth, I'm so glad you're here. And I want to ask this lovely question. You know what? A lot of people are pivoting right now and they're looking to develop a business, start something up. What are the biggest mistakes they can avoid?
Number one is they have to get a customer, and it can't be your mother, and it can't be your friend, and it can't be your grandmother. I mean, you have to have a real customer, not somebody who knows you really, really well. Yeah. And one of my favorite things to say, you know, you're talking to one of your friends about an idea that you had, and they go, oh, that's a really great idea. Terrific. Will you invest in it? That will tell you whether it's a really great idea or not. Because if they're willing to put their money where their mouth is, the great idea, then guess what? You probably do have a great idea, but you've got to get a customer that's not a family member or a friend. And by proving that you can get customers, then you can find out why they're using your products and services, what the benefits are, and then you can go and do marketing based on that type of thing. And so you build your customer base that way. Too many companies go, I have this phenomenal idea. And then they open their doors and they don't have any customers. Better you get the customers first, then open your doors.
Yeah, that's like seeing the really unique shop in the strip mall. And you're like, wow. And then 3 months later, it's gone because nobody walked in there.
Yeah, exactly. You got it.
Okay. Now, this is the pandemic question. Mm-hmm. How can small businesses implement themselves from further economic fallout due to the coronavirus? Because, you know, we could have the strains, people coming back to work, all sorts of things.
Yeah. The way I look at it is two things. Number one, we talked about building your cash, you know, saving 2% of every dollar that comes in the door. That is your security blanket. If we want to look at Snoopy, for example, I guess I'm dating myself with Peanuts, but anyway, it's really, if you can start saving money and do it religiously, you know, the implementation piece, you're going to find that if we get another pandemic, then you've got at least money saved up and you can go, all right, I can get through this because I have 6 months saved up, or I've got a year saved up, or whatever the number is. That's number one, is cushion yourself with the cash. Number two is go talk to the customers that you've had in the past and see how they're doing. You may want to reactivate inactive customers. One of the things that drives me absolutely insane and literally insane is when people say, okay, I'm going to do marketing and advertising. And they're always trying to get new customers. Take care of your customers. Take care of your existing customers. I challenge everybody who's watching this to go and look at their customer base and see how many customers they haven't talked to in a year to 18 months to somewhere around 5 years. And talk to them. And you're going to get, I thought you went out of business.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, because you didn't talk to them. And they're looking for somebody else to handle whatever their needs are. And they've written you a check, or they've given you a credit card or something like that in the past, and you just ignored them. That's nuts.
One of the other questions I have for you, just a follow-up to that, is so many businesses have one revenue source. So if, guess what, your restaurant got shut down, where are you going to get your other revenue from? Is this one of the principles you talk about with people, or...
Yeah, I mean, one of the guys who is in a mastermind group with me has the oldest steakhouse in Florida. So you may know who that is. But anyway, when COVID shut down his steakhouse, he still had the butcher shop. He still had a database of 40,000 people who were on his birthday list or anniversary list or whatever else it is to contact them for takeout. And he literally had so many different people that he could talk to, even though the steakhouse itself was shut down. He could do catering, which basically went away, but he could do takeout. He could do the butcher shop. He could do so many other things and not just have the restaurant. And what really made it good is that he had developed a customer list over a long period of time that had 40,000 names on it. They kept him alive, mm-hmm. Absolutely kept him alive during the pandemic. Yeah, so yeah. That's his recurring revenue.
There was out here in California, there was one restaurant that did something similar, and they had to hire drivers to deliver the meals because, you know, obviously people weren't going out anywhere, but they were delivering meals over the place. And he was probably 80% of where he was, on a regular night on a typical week. And he was just like, yeah, it's not bad at all. And so he didn't have the butcher shop, but he stayed very profitable. Because basically it went from a wait staff to no wait staff, but cooks and people who took orders. and delivery driver. So it worked out very, very well. So
yeah, I mean, you're looking at things, you know, we said build the recurring revenue. He built recurring revenue because he had a customer base when the restaurant shut down.
Yeah. And the cool thing is he's got 40,000 people. I doubt they're all in Florida, but the nice thing is he could be shipping his butcher, all the steaks that he butchered, just like Omaha Steaks and many others do, around the United States.
Sure.
So that's wonderful. Why not? Now, yeah. One of the things that I do want to ask is so many small businesses go bankrupt. Okay. Mm-hmm. How can they avoid such a fate?
All right. I'm going to start sounding like a broken record. Make sure you have a customer base. Make sure you have cash flow. Make sure you have a budget.
Well, you know what? I think that is what you're really telling people is saying, hey, look, guys, if you really want to stay in business and be profitable and wealthy, there's basic things you need to do and you need to stick with them. This isn't rocket science. There's many people who don't have college degrees, never went to college, you know what, that are doing very, very well with this. So now, what are some easy ways to grow business wealth?
All right. The easiest way that I know of to grow business wealth is the 2%, putting the 2% away. The second easiest ways to grow business wealth is to look at what your assets are. All right. Remember, your P&L is just month by month by month by month, and it starts over again. So if you had a lousy month, so be it. You got to get to start over. Your balance sheet started the day you started your business. So what can we build up asset-wise that are fairly liquid, i.e. we can convert them into cash pretty quickly? It might be, you know, finding an analogous business, i.e., you know, sending the butcher shop information all over the world. Butcher shop products, not information, products all over the world. But you need to build recurring revenue with a customer base who is loyal to you and you are loyal to them of some way, shape, or form. They may pay for it. They may not. It just depends upon, you know, restaurants are not paying for it, but they, you know, come in for their anniversaries and their birthdays and all that sort of fun stuff. So you got that. Others, you might have, like for heating and air guys, you might have maintenance programs to take care of their maintenance on their heating and air conditioning system. So they actually pay for those. So building as much recurring revenue and customers that way would be number two. Number three would be just making sure you watch your cash flow every single day. All right. You need to know what's going on. There's a weekly cash flow report in The Courage to Be Profitable that you can very easily do. And I'm happy to send anybody who wants it, the cash flow report. But it makes you really look at what did we start, what came in, what went out, where are we, and where do we expect to be for next week? And you want to make sure that you're in a situation where you've got enough money to pay your bills. And if you don't, what's going to happen? And number three is if you watch cash flow starting to go down, you do something about it. You say, stop. You know, it's not, I mean, I have a client of mine who until August of this year, everything was going great. And I know every week what his numbers are, and his numbers started going down from a budget perspective and his cash flow went down at the same time. And I'm screaming at him and the bookkeeper's screaming at him. And in December, he sends me an email and says, I'm out of cash. How did this happen? And I looked at him, I called him and I said, did you not listen to anything we were telling you? Well, no. Well, he had to get hit between the eyes with a 2x4 in order for him to pay attention. Now, luckily he has lines of credit and stuff like that. But that's not the point. Pay attention every week. If things are going bad, turn them around that week. What can you do this week to turn it around? Can you talk to 5 customers? Can you talk to customers who you haven't talked to in 2 years? You know, there are things that you can do every week. And if you do have employees, they have ideas. Put together a bonus program that, you know, if we reach X number of dollars in sales this month, everybody gets $100 or $200 or whatever the number is. It doesn't matter. But get everybody on the same page, making sure that they understand where they fit in. Make sure they understand how they take care, how they fit into the customer who writes their paycheck, and go from that perspective. That's what I would do.
We got about 30 seconds left.
Okay.
I have this question. I said, why do you call yourself the Profitability Master? And where can people learn more about your book and where can they get it and how can they get in contact with you?
All right. I call myself the Profitability Master because I am all about profitability. It's helping people with the tools and processes to get them and stay profitable and build wealth. That's what that's why I was put on this earth. All right. So that's why I'm called Profitability Master. If it's really easy, just go to ruthking.info. All of my contact information is there. All of my books are there. All the TV show stuff is there. I mean, it's all in one place on ruthking.info.
Well, great. Thank you very, very much, Ruth. I appreciate you being here. I love the insights And quite frankly, I'm very grateful because so many people can learn just from the lessons you got today. I recommend everybody go out and get Profit or Wealth. It'd be a wonderful book. It's an easy read. And hey, I wish you happy and healthiness. And hopefully we can have you back sometime.
I'd love it. Thanks, Steve. You have a great day.
Hey, you too. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Ruth King, the author of Profit and Wealth, Simple Rules for Sustaining Business Growth. You know what? She's been doing it for 40 years. She's passionate about helping people become profitable and grow wealth. If that has an interest for you, hey, go to Amazon, go to any major bookseller, get that book, Profit or Wealth. Might make a difference in your life. Now, I want to thank you all for joining us today. We had a wonderful interview with Rick Grimaldi, from Fisher and Phillips in reference to how to be nimble and flex. You can get his book as well as Amazon. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. We have Glenn Henderson to talk about what's going on in real estate and the five things you need to do to sell your house for the most money. And Todd Palmer's coming in here. We're looking forward to have Tom because he has been able to help people produce wealth. And my goal is to make sure you can get the ins and outs of money. So look forward to seeing you next week. That's it. Saving with Steve. Stay happy, stay healthy.
Thank you for joining us for the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton. To learn more about the show and how to become a guest or sponsor, visit savingwithsteve.us. That's savingwithsteve.us. Join us again next time as we continue to talk about everything under the sun that relates to you having a healthier, happier relationship with money. This has been the Saving with Steve show, hosted by Steve Sexton.